You're listening to New Churches Podcast, a production of Send Network on newchurches.com. We discuss all things church planting. If you're looking to take your next step toward multiplication, you're in the right place. newchurches.com provides relevant and reliable resources for church planters, church multipliers, and disciple makers. Our growing library features pastors, planters, and church leaders like Ed Stetzer, David Platt, Trillia Newbell, Christine Hoover, Dahati Lewis, Trevin Wax, and many others.
Hey, Ed Stetzer here, another episode of the New Churches Podcast, but with a friend, well, I mean, not that these other people I talk to are not friends, but with a friend of many years and we'll talk about this a little bit later on, a steward of the podcast in exciting and important ways. So Trevin Wax is the Vice President of Research and Resource Development at the North American Mission Board. He's a visiting professor. I guess you visit a lot of places, but when you and I are going to Oxford in May, to teach, you're teaching with me at Wycliffe Hall at Oxford. And what's the school that I serve as the dean at, Trevin Wax?
This would be Talbot, Ed. I think everyone already knows you've made the move to Talbot.
I'm just saying, but you get to teach Talbot students alongside Wheaton. There'll be some Wheaton students there actually finishing up, and then Wycliffe students as well. But yeah, we had a lot of fun. He started teaching for me some at Wheaton, and now we're doing some stuff fun at Talbot and at Oxford. Anyway, former missionary to Romania. I don't know that people always know that. But foreign missionary Romania, one of my favorite things about you, you know, writes different places, got a blog at the Gospel Coalition. We launched together the Gospel Project, and that was super fun. And got some books. He's written The Thrill of Orthodoxy, The Multidirectional Leader, Rethink Yourself, This Is Our Time, Gospel Center Teaching. And you guys have three kids. You and Karina have three children who are like in college now, which is... Again,
just the oldest, not all of them.
Oh, okay.
Don't age me too much.
Yeah, no. Well, you still look like you're 11, so that's why people.
It's great.
Great. I guess that's not the worst thing. So, okay. So let's jump in and talk. We're going to talk about the role of denominations and networks in church planning. We actually did a podcast together that I want you to mention where people can go listen to your deconstruction conversation. But let's talk a little bit about what role, I got some thoughts on this, what role do denominations play in supporting or shaping church planning? Or should I say denominations and networks? And let's start there.
Well, this is a topic that I brought up with our team when saying I really want to talk with you about this, Ed, because I don't know anyone who is more broadly connected to more denominations in the world than you are. I mean, we've known each other a long time, and if I just had a list of all of the different denominational meetings, groups, affinities, network partnerships that you've been a part of, it would be a very long list. I'm sure you have the exact number. What is it, 60 something?
Different denominations.
So, yeah. How did I know you would know the number?
So not everyone likes that though. So, you know, you say it like it's a good thing, but you know, Timothy George, our mutual friend, once said I was most ecumenically minded. And I'm saying, but you can't say ecumenically minded. That means different things to different people. But yeah, in evangelical ecumenism is a space where I go a lot. But yes.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, ecumenically in the evangelical world, I think it's interesting to hear you talk about Roman Catholicism and Eastern Orthodoxy and the limits to certain partnerships there. But the reason why I think it's important for us to have a conversation about church planting and denominations is because on my podcast, Reconstructing Faith, I wanted to address what's often for some denominations the elephant in the room, and that is the decline of most denominations today and the rapid rise of non-denominational churches. You could see it in the stats from the last 20 years. I mean, it's really stunning. It's one of the more underreported aspects of religious demographic shift in the last 20 years. So there's the rise of the nuns, those that don't have any affiliation with religion. Then you have the rise of the nons, right? That are just, they're part of churches that are no longer belonging to a family of churches. So I guess the question is, what does that mean for church planting? And so I'm just curious, as you look out over the landscape and you see denominations that are, you know, going big or going home when it comes to church planting and other non-denominational groups who are also proliferating across the country. Like, what does this mean for the state of church planting in the U.S.?
You know, I can't think of something that means more probably for the difference in how churches are partnering together. I wrote an article in CNN a while ago on the rise of evangelical nuns. So nuns are, you know, non-denominational you know, I wish they would have been more clever and said nones, but they wanted to go with evangelical nuns, saying they're not part of a denomination. So I think that the church planting, which if you go back to the pre-50s, up to the 1950s, pretty much church planting was overwhelmingly denominational and really overwhelmingly non-entrepreneurial. In other words, you know, the First Presbyterian Church would find a place, another town 20 minutes away, and they would send people, hire, they'd start a mission committee, they'd get a group of people to go there, and then they'd go find a pastor after the people started meeting. It was a chapel, then it became a congregation, all that sort of stuff. Well, everything changed in the 80s, and it changed with the rise of really what were, I mean, non-denominational. Saddleback at that time was affiliated with the denomination. Willow Creek was not, but people began to just kind of they kind of began to partner together based on their affinity, the way they do church, more than their theological distinctives. So, you know, a Methodist church that was purpose-driven would have more in common with a Presbyterian church that was purpose-driven than someone in their own denomination. So, but it didn't, they didn't leave their denominations then in the 80s. But eventually, by the time the mid-80s, all of a sudden, just you can see this tick up in the general social survey. If you use the RELTRAD, which is the sorting mechanism of that. And I'll tell you a very nerd fact. If you've ever looked at the general social survey and you've looked at the percent of evangelicals, and you'll notice that it explodes in the mid 80s and goes forward here. The code was actually broken in about 15 years ago. I forget the exact, it might've been 10 years ago. And Ryan Burge and our team discovered it at Lifeway Research. Ryan Burge and I wrote an article in the, I think it's the Cambridge-hosted Journal of Religion and Politics, that actually basically said that everyone who did their research on this using the RELTRAD and the General Social Survey used broken code, including Ryan in his PhD dissertation. And because, you know what it left out? Non-denominational evangelicals. So it had to be like recreated, but it was so like a small thing that people didn't think about it. Today, depending on what tool you use, it's a third, you know, and that's a lot of people. So what's kind of taken the place as non-denominational sort of becomes the emerging kind of reality, what took place was networks of those churches. Because here's the thing. If churches are going to do church planting and global missions, they're going to do it together. So if denominations are on the decline, they just create networks, which, by the way, almost all denominations were once networks. And so the cycle sort of continues. But right now, in some ways, they were very freeing. I mean, if you look at most scholars of American Christianity, they would say that the rise of non-denominationalism let loose entrepreneurial leaders to do all kinds of entrepreneurial things. And a lot of that's good, not all of it, but a lot of that's good. Though I would say that the reason that the largest gathering of church planters in the United States every year, and maybe the largest gathering in the world, is the Exponential Conference, is because, I mean, they're old, you know, restoration movement, you know, independent Christian churches, but it's a non-denominational thing. That's where a lot of the energy there. Now, we see energy. The Assemblies of God does Church Multiplication Network. Southern Baptist did Send Network. You know, even smaller groups like Nitrogen Network come out of, you know, they're intra-denominational. But a lot of the energy went to non-denominational in the late 90s, early 2000. And then some denominations, I think, are kind of learned from that and took some of that energy back. And I think it's a good thing that all of us learn from one another.
So a question I've got on this then is, so if you're part of a church plant that is involved with a denomination, what are the strengths and weaknesses of that, the pros and cons of that? Like, what are the, because you and I have talked about this before, institutions endure. Mm-hmm. Way more than I think people give them credit for. Like, a lot of times we live in an institutional age that doesn't seem to value what institutions bring, because a lot of times institutions, like, change can be really difficult in institutions. You can lose patience. You can wonder if this is actually as effective as it once was. All of those are good questions. I guess my question would be, so for church planters that are thinking about denominations, obviously this, you know, New Churches is powered by the Sin Network. So there's a denominational affiliation there. What should be the approach, the relationship that church planters have if they're considering a network of churches or a belonging to a denomination?
Well, you know that I'm always pro those things. I wrote the cover story for Christianity Today, I don't even know, a decade plus ago. And it's called Denominationalism, Is There a Future? And the you know, they don't show you the cover art, but the cover art they chose was a tombstone of Denominationalism, Is There a Future? But my article was actually like, yes, Christians form churches want to do the Great Commission. You can't do the Great Commission alone. It's too big. So you form partnerships with other people. Now, the challenge is that, you know, the denomination that you engage in can be have positive or negative impacts of that, right? If your denomination has a really bad reputation, that's hard to overcome. So people then will say, you know, well, we'll use, I mean, now most people don't put the denomination name in their church, most church planners, I should say. But, you know, you're still going to have on your webpage, people are like, well, I'm not, you know, I'm not Pentecostal, so I'm not going to go to that church, or I'm not Baptist, so I'm not going to go to that church. So you do begin with some people who have an opinion, but not everybody does. You know what most unchurched people think about denominations? Nothing. So they're not sitting around thinking that, well, I don't want to be a Presbyterian. I don't want to be a Baptist. They're just not thinking about it. So I think the strength of denominations are resourcing and community, right? So you're going to have a group of people who are for you, are going to help you, help resource you. Community, you got a group of people you can lean on. I'm also think that theology really matters in denominational traditions. So I think that I'm super thankful for my Anglican brothers and sisters for the work that they're doing. And I think that if you believe that there are bishops and pastors and deacons, and you believe that the Eucharist should be central in the expression of your worship, and you believe the articles, you should be an Anglican. And you know, and I, you could be a, I mean, there's like non-connectional Anglicans. It's a little strange to me, but I think you should be in a tradition that draws together your theological beliefs. So I think that bringing together for common belief helps you, can help shape you. The institutions that are a part of it can help impact you as well. I would also say, too, that when you get in trouble, it's helpful to have. You know, I was, when Willow Creek kind of, not kind of, when Willow Creek started its explosive challenges, you know, I got a call and they said, hey, you know, we need to put together some sort of group to help us address some of these things. And, you know, it's interesting that the group that was put together, I recommended a few people, I'm sure other people did as well, but it was the head of the Wesleyans. I remember calling Joanne Lyons instead of talking about it. It was head of the Wesleyans. It was the head of the Evangelical Covenant Church. It was Leith Anderson, the head of the National Association of Evangelicals. It was Margaret Diddams, who was the provost at Wheaton College. And you know what they all had in common? They Willow Creek is the most famous, we're not in a denomination church in the world, that when it went bad, they needed people who understood institutions to help them walk through some of those things. I didn't include everyone on the group because I don't remember them all. But so I do think that denominations sometimes are most needed when the difficult times come. Now, of course, church planners never think they're going to be difficult times, but invariably they do come. And you want not just a family, because you can get that like with your friends. You can have a group of people who are kind of for you, but you want somebody who can be there. And I remember when I left my first church plant, I called our district, and my denomination is called an association. And I said, you know, here's going to be the person. I'd had a person in mind that would be the successor. But I want to connect, make sure that you're involved and engaged. And there was somebody there, you know, otherwise, you know, Trevin, I'm talking too long, but how many times I get called up and say, Ed, you know, our church is in a difficulty or I need some advice. And I say, well, have you talked to your denomination? And I would say the vast majority of time people say, well, we don't have one. And I'm kind of like, well, I can't be your denomination now. So you need it before. Or your network. Again, networks can have this as well. And there's all, you know, the blurring of distinctions between networks and denominations is quite evident. But those are some of the reasons I would say that it matters.
You know, we were talking about the explosive rise of non-denominational churches, but it's weird because in the church planting world, it seems like to me that there's been not only the arrival of new networks in the past 20 years or so, but there's also been renewed emphasis within denominations on church planting. There's been renewed energy there, creative energy that's been taking place. So I'm just, as you look out over the landscape and you kind of, if you could project a little bit into the future when it comes to denominational involvement in church planting, like what are you seeing? What expectations do you have as you look over the landscape right now?
Yeah, and it's a good question. So, and it's a question of what's caused an effect. So, you know, if you, I mean, you could sit back and say, you know, because I was at the first meetings of what was called MX9 and then became CMN, the Church Multiplication Network of the Assemblies of God. And I think it would be fair to say that that you know the Association of Related Churches, ARC, came up a lot in some of those conversations. When the Send Network was forming, I'm pretty sure Acts 29 came up a lot in those conversations. So in a sense, you could say, I don't think it's completely fair, that one of the things that denominations found is that church planters would go to their denominational annual meeting and they felt like an alien, like 100 people and five of them are church planters and they all can spot each other across the room and everyone else just has a different culture, they're in a different space and a different vibe. So what happened was, as these networks really exploded, people went to interdenominational networks, and then some denominations said we could create intra-denominational networks. And I think that's probably good. I mean, I think it's good. Now, I don't think that that was the only reason, but I think it's fair to say when the North American Mission Board, for whom you work now, president said to me, I want you to go to Acts 29 early in the days, get involved, learn what's going on so we can learn from it. And you can speak into it, right? They were young and they need some more experience and they would listen sometimes and then sometimes they didn't. I was there when people were saying we got to learn from and we got to bottle some of whatever these networks have. But at the same time, I think institutions endure. I think if you look at the two big denominations church planting in America today, it's the Assemblies of God and the Southern Baptists. They're just like, the SBC is depending on how you count, 50,000-ish churches. The Assemblies of God is 13,000. And everybody else is like six and under who's involved in church planting. So they're the two big ones. They're going to be doing this in 15 years. I remember I was at Catalyst one year, and a pastor whose name everybody would know, I think I was working at the North American Mission Board at that time. He said, why are you still working for a denomination when none of the other speakers even go to denominational churches? And part of what I said is that institutions endure. And if you had said that had to be 20 years ago, if you had said 20 years ago, there'd be this resurgence of church planting focus at the Send Network, I don't think people would have believed it. I think it was inconceivable. But I would say, during that time, things like purpose-driven, I think everyone would be very familiar with it, but purpose-driven had this incredible energy. 1 out of 10 churches in America did one of the 40 days campaigns, if I recall. And yet, I don't think people are generally thinking that way, using purpose-driven language. I mean, still, don't misunderstand. I think Rick Warren's personal influence is still substantive, but his paradigm influence is not as influential. Whereas the Church Multiplication Network and the Send Network is still rallying and probably even at a greater level, rallying people to church planting. So church denominations go in waves. Some things do what the writer of Hebrews says. They provoke them to love and good deeds, and then they get back engaged. I will tell you, when I was in the church planting team of the North American Mission Board, church planting was one of a few things on a shelf that I don't think we did particularly aggressively, and in some ways, people didn't look to us for advice and counsel. I think that's changed a lot, and I think partly that's because of the shift, sometimes provoked by denominations, sometimes just every once in a while, denomination need to say, all right, how do we think again about church planting and missions? And I think that's a good thing.
I want to go back to something you said at the beginning. I know we've got to wrap it up here, but just a little while ago, you talked about one of the challenges that some church planters may have felt in previous decades would be attending a denominational meeting, going to some of the meetings of places where they're receiving some funding, some level of support at some level, or encouragement through the churches that belong to a denomination that are helping a church get started. And you said they felt out of place, like they didn't necessarily relate to a lot of people. They didn't know a lot of people, or they needed to spot the other church planters in the room. How would you counsel a church planter who is listening to this and they're thankful for the denominational support, for the investment that they've had from a ascending church that belongs to a family of churches? And maybe they've come right out of that church or from a couple of churches that are supporting them, but they have not really engaged the denomination or the convention or the network or the family of churches at a broader level. What wisdom or counsel would you give to them that are kind of navigating that that landscape for the first time.
I would say don't take money from a family you're not willing to be part of first. And I think that's important. I don't think that that's a appropriate way. No, I don't think that, you know, denominational life can be very complex. I mean, denominations have calendars of emphases, like twice a month you're supposed to emphasize this and that. And I would say you do not have to carry, you know, you're planting a church, not carrying a denominational flag. You're the what you're leading with is the good news of the gospel, women and men responding by grace and through faith. So, but I would say, I do think there's a important place that the denominations get frustrating to people because they maybe, they end up reflecting people, reflecting a group of people who show up. Decisions are made by people who show up. And I think that, you know, when I think about how church planting at the pace of some of those, you know, larger denominations, it's, you know, like I couldn't say this about the LCMS because the pace is much slower, but let's throw in there Converge. Let's throw in there the Wesleyans at, Indiana denomination. You know, let's throw in there, you know, the Church of God Cleveland. The pace of some of those denominations of planting means that you know, in 30, 40 years, their whole denomination could be reshaped by the plants. But what happens is church planters who are often very focused on the individual church plant, and I get that. I want you to be. I don't want you to be running the denominational, you know, and what happens is they ask you to be like on these committees and all sort of stuff. Well, pace yourself. But I would just say that the Lord has put us in a family. Let's stay connected to that family and make that family better. So if you're in a denomination or a network, I think there's value to being in there. Now, you know, it's tricky because, you know, sometimes denominations make it hard. You know, a denomination that's perpetually at war with itself is going to have a hard time keeping its young leaders. And we've seen that. But I think ultimately, you know, sometimes the seasons of conflict, they come and go. But the institutions still endure. And I think for the kingdom, to me, now again, you know this, Trevor, we've talked about this for years. I am an institutionalist for good or for ill. But I would say that if you talk to Ed Stetzer in 1994, when I sort of kind of decided that being an institutionalist was a good thing, none of my peers at that time. So, you know, I'm 57. So you got to look at people, you know, maybe from 40 to 60 today, or maybe 40, 65 today. None of my peers, or not my peers, many of the people who you would know who were in that space, they just didn't necessarily value that in the same way. I think the time has proven that institutions endure, and I want to influence institutions for the good. So that's why I was at Wheaton College. You know, that's why, you know, I worked at the North American Mission Board. I worked at, Lifeway. We work at Lifeway together at Wheaton College and now the Talbot School of Theology. So at Biola University. And I think, you know, we're the fifth largest multi-denominational seminary in the world. I got over 1,000 seminary students. And I think ultimately by walking this journey with institutions that we can make a bigger difference in doing it on our own. It's harder though. It's a pain, right? So I had a meeting yesterday about moving things along in the management system. I need to get 14 people to press approvals in a day. So go on to the grad council so the grad council could do that. But we've got this amazing Talbot en Español program that now we've got certificate. Now we're launching a master's degree program in Spanish and we're in Southern California and there were, you know, all these places. But here's the thing, you go slower, but you go farther when you do it in institutions.
That's a good word. That's a good word. Well, Ed, thanks for having this conversation. And I want to thank everyone listening to the New Churches podcast. We hope that this has been a helpful conversation about the importance of institutions, denominations, networks, the way that we relate to our family of churches.
Can I throw something out there at the end too?
Yeah.
So if you're a denominational leader and you'd like to gather with other denominational leaders, we've partnered. The Church Planting Leadership Fellowship has partnered with Exponential, and we have private meetings twice a year. And if you're interested, you can find the Facebook page, Ask to Join. It's about 100 to 150 leaders of denominations, Anglicans and Baptists and Presbyterians and non-denominational. Trevin's been there, Trevin's spoken. And what we do is we try to sharpen each other and learn from one another so we can plant those churches for the glory of God and advance His kingdom. So obviously we believe in it enough that I actually gather the leaders of those networks and denominations. So I hope if you listen this long in the podcast, just go CPLF, Church Planting Leadership Fellowship on Facebook, ask to join the private group. And if you get through, we'll see you on the Facebook page.
You've been listening to the New Churches Podcast, brought to you by Send Network. If you like what you heard, take a few minutes to rate and review us or share this episode with a friend. It's the best way to show your support. To find more reliable resources to start your new church well, visit newchurches.com.